Before we get into the what if we're wrong discussion, I want to make sure we cover a few stories that deserve attention, even if they're outside the tech focus. The coral reef discovery in West Africa, specifically off the coast of Benin, is genuinely exciting science. A reef system that had been written off as dead or severely degraded due to warming and runoff was found to be actively thriving. The HN thread noted this challenges some of the modeling assumptions used to predict coral health, because the local oceanographic conditions created a temperature buffer that wasn't fully captured in the global models.
This matters beyond the feel-good headline. Coral reef systems serve as marine biodiversity hotspots. Roughly a quarter of all ocean species spend some part of their life cycle in reef environments, despite reefs covering less than 1% of the ocean floor. A reef system of any significant size that was previously undercount serves as both a biodiversity refuge and a data point about resilience mechanisms that might inform restoration strategies elsewhere.
The Jacobian conjecture counterexample digested by Terence Tao is a mathematics story that landed well on HN, with 272 points and 103 comments, an unusually engaged discussion for pure math. The Jacobian conjecture is a problem in algebraic geometry that's been open since 1939. A counterexample would mean the conjecture is false, which is a significant result. Tao's blog post is a digestible explanation of the claimed counterexample's structure, which, given Tao's credibility as a Fields Medal winner, carries weight even before peer review completion.
The HN math community noted that claimed solutions to long-standing open problems have a poor track record. The Jacobian conjecture specifically has seen multiple claimed proofs and counterexamples that didn't survive scrutiny. Tao's engagement suggests it's at minimum worthy of serious attention, but the community appropriately flagged that Terry Tao wrote about it, and it's confirmed, are different things.
The Apollo 11 source code repository resurfacing on HN, the GitHub archive of the original guidance computer code for the command and lunar modules, is one of those periodic rediscoveries that the community embraces. The code was digitized by MIT's Draper Laboratory archives and published to GitHub in 2016. What makes it perennially interesting is the combination of extreme engineering constraint, the Apollo guidance computer had roughly 4 kbits of RAM, and the comments in the source code, some of which are genuinely poetic and some of which reflect the engineer's sense of humor under enormous pressure.
There's a 10 Steps Towards Happiness post from Peter Hinchins, a software architect who was one of the founders of the Zero MQ project, originally published in 2015. He passed away in 2016, and this post resurfaces periodically on HN when people rediscover his writing. The engagement, 154 points and 57 comments, reflects that it continues to resonate. His perspective on happiness was deeply informed by his community-building work and his eventual terminal illness, and the writing has a directness that people find useful.
The Radio Decline essay is in that same category, a thoughtful personal piece about what the medium lost when it consolidated from local voices into national syndication and algorithmic programming. 120 points and 116 comments suggest the comment-to-score ratio is high, meaning people wanted to discuss it more than upvote it, which often indicates a topic where opinions diverge.
All right, Marcus, let's do the what if we're wrong exercise, because I think the area where we've been most confident today is the claim that export controls on advanced chips have been insufficient to constrain Chinese AI development, and that Kimi K3 and DeepSeek's benchmark performance proves this.
That's a reasonable place to apply pressure. My confident version of the claim is, Chinese AI labs are achieving competitive performance despite chip constraints, which suggests the export controls are failing at their stated goal of maintaining a capability gap. I've said this fairly confidently. So what's the strongest challenge to that?
Here's the counterargument I'd make. Benchmark performance on specific evals is not the same as general capability at the frontier. And it's especially not the same as the ability to do sustained large-scale research. The labs that are winning on specific benchmarks may be doing extraordinarily focused optimization for those benchmarks, allocating their constrained compute budget toward evals they can publish, while potentially falling behind. on the kinds of large-scale experimental runs that produce the next generation of architectural innovations. We might be seeing the visible tip of a capability curve that's actually shallower than it appears.
That's a genuinely good challenge. The assumption I'd need to examine is whether benchmark performance is a reliable proxy for underlying research capacity. If you have less compute, you run fewer experiments, and fewer experiments means slower progress on the things that are hard to optimize directly. A lab with a tenth of the compute budget of a frontier lab can absolutely publish competitive benchmark results by choosing where to focus, but that doesn't mean they're producing the same breadth of capability advance.
There's also the question of what state-of-the-art means on any given benchmark at any given time. Benchmarks saturate. Once enough labs have optimized against them, the top performers are clustered closely, and the benchmark stops being discriminating. A Chinese lab hitting the top of a saturated benchmark might tell us less about frontier capability than we'd like.
So, if we're wrong about this, if the export controls are actually working more effectively than the benchmark data suggests, what would we expect to see? I'd say, watch for Chinese labs announcing large model training runs that require compute levels inconsistent with what restricted hardware can provide. If we don't see those announcements over the next 18 months, that's consistent with the controls being more binding than the benchmark results imply. The signal to watch is compute-intensive long-horizon research, not benchmark snapshots.
And the alternate signal, if the controls really aren't working, would be Chinese labs releasing genuinely novel architectural innovations rather than optimized versions of known architectures. Architectural innovation typically requires the ability to run large numbers of ablation experiments, which is compute intensive. If we see real architectural breakthroughs from chip-constrained labs, that would be a meaningful update.